My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She's the president of the Galen Institute, one of the leading and most respected healthcare policy firms in the country. She joins us now to talk about some of the latest developments as it pertains to the debate still going on over the president's healthcare laws. We saw this week that the House Republican budget blueprint over the next 10 years assumes the repeal of the president's healthcare plan. We'll talk about what that might mean fiscally as well as the political feasibility of that. And we'll get Grace Marie's insights on the new levels of paperwork being required for healthcare enrollment as a result of the growing number of regulations associated with the law. And Grace Marie, it's always good to have you with us.
Such a pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Well, let's start with the Ryan budget. First of all, on the fiscal front, we know that originally it was said to cost less than $1 trillion over 10 years. Now the estimates suggest it'll be substantially more than that. When it comes to balancing our budget, and I know you're more of the healthcare policy expert than our balanced budget expert, but how much of a factor would rubbing Obamacare off the books mean for our bottom line?
Well, I mean, when you look at the overall impact of this law on the economy, we know that it's hugely important in depressing job creation. It's forcing companies to put people on part-time when they need full-time workers. The incredible number of new taxes, $1 trillion in new taxes in this law, just in its own right, it is one of the major factors that's depressing economic growth. And when you have economic growth depressed, you don't have the tax revenue that you need because of a vibrant economy. So it's a double hit. It's got all the huge new taxes, the mountain of paperwork and regulation that's coming with this law, and it's depressing economic growth, which then depresses the taxes that we need to run the government. So it's like triple harm from this law.
Grace Marie, back at the start of the year when we saw a lot of Republican governors deciding not to open the exchanges, and at that time a lot of them not deciding to agree to Medicaid expansion as well. Since that time, as we've got closer to the deadline, more governors certainly have embraced Medicaid expansion, and even a few have taken on the exchanges as well. A couple of months ago, you were saying that the trend of conservative governors at the time might mean that it's the states that could end up taking out Obamacare. Now that we know how this has largely played out, are you confident that's still the case?
You know, I was actually in Tennessee yesterday testifying before both houses of the state legislature, meeting with a dozen members, including the Speaker of the House, and they are absolutely going to put their foot down and say, we're not expanding Medicaid. I've talked with Speaker Will Weatherford, who's the Speaker of the House in Florida. Even though Governor Rick Scott has said that he wants to expand Medicaid, the legislature has said, we're not going to let it happen. I think you're going to see the same thing happen in Arizona, in other states where the governors have been swayed by the false claims of the lobbyists about the impact of Medicaid expansion. And you're going to see them hitting a firewall of state legislatures who see the price tag. It's this promise of the government paying for the expansion of Medicaid up to about $30,000 a year for a family of four initially. Because the funding falls, because of all the other costs involved, this is going to cost states $118 billion over the next 10 years. And so they're starting to look at the price of this. They're seeing the job depression. I mean, when the studies have shown that when you create new public sector jobs, like the jobs that will be created by the Medicaid expansion, you take away 1.44 private sector jobs. So you're actually doing more harm than good. The hospitals are out lobbying in force for this, and you have to wonder why, because they lose money on every Medicaid patient they see. It's a loss leader. They want the new revenues, but it costs them more to provide the care than they're getting in resources. This is not a solution for the hospitals, but somehow they're in a very short-term focus. They're thinking they need to lobby for this. It's crazy, and that's the governors are buying into this.
Grace Marie, just to follow up, you've laid out a very compelling case for why you think it's wrong for this to continue to go forward. But given what we've seen at the Supreme Court, at the ballot box in 2012, and at this point, it would seem a decent number of states going along with it, albeit reluctantly in some cases, that it's going to be entrenched?
I don't know. Only 17 states have said that they're going to set up their own exchanges. And Connecticut, which is one of the ones that's all in with setting up an exchange to implement the subsidies for Obamacare, is saying, okay with the regs, stop with the regs. If you're going to want us to be ready by October 1st, we can't keep having this avalanche of new regulations. California, which also is all in, is saying, we don't think we're going to be ready for this. The federal government has to run, either all or in part, 33 state exchanges. The House just said, we're not providing you any more money to do that. And the Senate went along, basically saying we're not putting money in the budget. When people start to see the cost of the insurance in these exchanges, if they ever get created, then people are going to walk. So I think that the final vote on Obamacare is what the people do. And the people are going to not buy this expensive insurance. They're going to walk away. They're going to pay the fines. Businesses are paying the fines rather than participating in this. You know, ultimately, people are going to vote with their feet, and they're going to vote against this law by what they do.
What do you make of the effort, Paul Ryan, assuming that Obamacare will be repealed, which would suggest that House Republicans are planning to make that push again? Senate Republicans tried, although they failed on Wednesday, to add defunding of the president's health care laws to the continuing resolution. What does that tell you about where this might be headed politically?
I was at a meeting this morning with Senator Rand Paul, who actually got a standing ovation when he walked into the meeting where I was, because of everybody stand with Rand for the filibuster. And he said he's going to, you know, it's mostly on the Senate side, it's mostly a statement, because it's never going to get enough votes out of a democratically controlled Senate to get out. But I think just continuing to make the case that the American people, when the president was elected, he was elected with about 50.6% of the vote, just slightly over 50%. 12% of those wanted to see Obamacare repealed. So even people who voted for the president and support for this law continues to decline. Somehow or another, this is going to shake out. All of the predictable routes to getting rid of Obamacare seem to have been closed, except the American people don't like this law. Some of them hate it. They're going to figure out a way to not lose our freedom, to have it not ruin our economy. And I don't know what that's going to be, but I'm going to continue to stay in this fight, because the American people don't want it, and they need to continue to understand the damage this law is doing to our economy, to our health sector, to health care costs, to job creation, and ultimately to economic growth.
Last question. This is on paperwork. We're seeing reports of what used to be a one- or two-page form to enroll in a health care plan. Now we're seeing dozens and dozens of pages. One I saw up to 60-plus pages. What will that do to productivity, and perhaps more importantly, what information are they gathering with all those pages?
Well, the law is very specific about what information the government has to have to find out whether or not you're eligible for the subsidies in these exchanges so you can get subsidized health insurance. They have to know your income, your family size, where you work, the tax identification number of your employer, the technical name of the plan that your employer offers that would qualify as a qualifying Obamacare health plan. People need help with this. California alone believes it needs 20,000 people just to help people fill out this form. The one I've seen is 21 pages, and it looks like a tax form. I think people, that's going to be one of the reasons that people say, I'm not doing this. They have to sell me insurance if I get sick at the same price as if I've been covering having health insurance all along. I'm just going to pay the fine, too. We're seeing employers saying, we're going to pay the fine, not comply. I think the next wave is individuals doing the same thing, both because they see the high cost of the coverage in these exchanges, which is going to be much more expensive than the coverage that they've had. Young people are going to be hit the hardest because the coverage, the insurance, they're forced to pay more so that older people can pay less. And they're not going to comply with all this paperwork. They're just going to walk. And that means, I think, that these exchanges are just not going to work. So the verdict is still out on this law. And as we've been saying all along, as we said in our book, Why Obamacare is Wrong for America, it's not going to work. And every day we see more evidence why it's not working.
Grace Marie, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us, as always.
Thank you, Greg. Always a pleasure.
Grace Marie Turner is president of the Galen Institute, one of the leading healthcare policy organizations in the country. Check them out at galen.org. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.